Are you working still, or Starbucks is closed for good, or what?
Our store is a drive-through store. Those stores are staying open, but we were sent an email on a Friday night, last Friday, that said all Starbucks employees get 30 days of paid leave. There was no more information in the email. So I opened up the store the next day and we had no answers. My manager was like, that was an oopsie email that went out a little too early. She didn't know. Somebody texted her and was like, she's like, what? So, and this is our store manager. So I worked all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and Sunday towards the end of my shift, like everyone's asking, are you guys closing? There were just so many unanswered questions. I was feeling very overwhelmed. And so I freaked out and started
Good.
crying and like
At work.
hyperventilating. Yes, it was just,
You're
there were so many
hyperventilating.
people touching me.
Hold it.
The mayor was sending notifications, stay safe and stay home. And New York is like,
On fire, I know.
fire and people come through from New York. It was just very like, it was all becoming too much.
Hold it. Was your cafe still open? Why were people touching you?
Well, because I'm in drive-through, I'm working in the window at this time.
Okay.
And then my girlfriend started texting, like, let's get together for happy hour. And I'm like, we've never done that before. Like, is this our last? Like, I just lost my mind and I was like, I need to leave. And I went to the bathroom and I called Brandon and I was like, ooh, I have to go to the grocery store on my way home. It was like hit me big time. I was getting direction from people, you should stay home, but my work was not saying you can stay home. So I was just feeling very stupid to be handing out coffee. I don't think
Yeah.
that's important.
I agreed, but it is like such a comfort. Like, as somebody who has to keep going to work and doesn't really want to keep leaving the house, I've been wanting more Starbucks just to make me feel better.
Yes, that's what my sister-in-law said. And so did Erica, my best friend. They're like,
They're both healthcare providers. Yeah.
they are. And they're both like, look, it is important. I was like, okay, I would stay there for y'all all day long. But these are our regulars who are coming through all together, getting iced teas, ready to go shopping. And I hate them. And then they stay in the in their parking lot, in our parking lot, and then they come through again for their refills. And I'm
Oh.
like, this is so dumb. This is ridiculous.
Okay. Which is just
Now,
moving everything outside.
right, exactly.
Regular. Okay.
Yeah. I did like talking with some of the nurses, but they were looking at me with the craziest looks in their eyes, like, be safe. And I'm like, what do you know that I don't know? What am I doing here?
It turns them to zombies. Hey, welcome back, friends. You are listening to the Mom Sterling Well podcast. I am Emily Thomas, the host, and this is a podcast that helps you love your actual life so you don't need to run away from home. Not that you really could right now if you wanted to. I hope you are enjoying the same day that you've had for about 2 weeks now, over and over and over. So at the top of the show, you heard a clip from the Struggling Sisters Patreon feed. And I put that in there because I just wanted you to know, like, we're all freaking out in our own special ways. Some of us in more public places than others, but we are all really going through it. So just know that you're not by yourself with all this virus shenanigans. I want to thank the newest members of the Patreon Strugs, Mila, Alyssa, Sandra, and Jill. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you're interested in more Struggling Sisters content and a private Facebook page, go to patreon.com/momstrugglingwell and join up. It's just a couple of pennies a day. So I am excited to share with you my guest this week, Anne Bogle. She has recently wrote a book called Don't Overthink It, and it's about kind of decision paralysis. We just get fatigued after we have so many decisions to make. And that's exactly something that we are all dealing with right now, I believe, since we are making lots of decisions with not a lot of information. So it came at a great time. If you are an overthinker, you will love this. She also talks about the importance of our posture during this pandemic because our kids will get us to know what they should think about things that are happening, right? They're always learning from us, even if it doesn't seem like a blessed thing is getting through their heads. All right, let's go ahead and jump in, and then I will talk to you later. Good morning, Anne. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Tumultuous time that we're in.
Things are wild right now in every way.
They're wild. They're super wild. Do you have toilet paper?
I do have toilet paper.
That's good. We have four.
But
rolls.
We always have toilet paper. I mean, we have four kids. There's six of us. I don't like going to Costco, so we only go every so often.
Oh, okay.
We always have toilet paper.
That's good. That's really good.
Do you have toilet paper?
No, we have like four rolls, so
okay.
We'll see what happens. Okay. We'll start using leaves from the backyard pretty soon.
I've seen people advocating for this thing that they euphemistically call it family cloth for a long time.
That.
And then you put it in the washing machine.
And then you blow up your washing machine because how gross.
I have no intention of going that route, but maybe that'll be all of us later this year.
It really might. Oh my gosh. Well, will you introduce yourself for us, please?
Sure. I'm Anne Bogle. If you know me at all, it's probably from my blog, Modern Mrs. Darcy, where we're devoted to helping readers get more out of their reading lives. We think when you get more out of your reading life, you get more out of the rest of your life as well, because books are shortcuts to the things that really matter in life. And then I have a books-only podcast called What Should I Read Next? And I've written a couple books.
You have. I love this book that you just read. Wrote called Don't Overthink It. It's so timely for this whole virus situation because, I mean, like we were talking about before we started recording, we're not playing with a full deck. Like, we don't have all the information. So making decisions is hard/impossible. So overthinking is very likely.
Yes. Not only are we facing new decisions that we've never had to make before with incomplete information, which is always hard. They're coming fast and furious. And I see so many people, including myself, and I wrote a book about this, I Know Better, are really being pulled into media-driven overthinking when you sit down at your computer or you pick up your phone and you hit refresh, 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 refresh. Yes. And it does not do good things for your health, your mental health, your peace of mind. It's not good. Yeah. I Know Better, and it still pulls me in. And I am completely believe all the stats I see saying that we're all hitting refresh and it's making us batty.
Yeah, for sure. I actually, just before we got on, saw that the European Union is asking Netflix to stop doing high definition streaming because they're afraid it's going to break the internet because the internet has never been used as much as it is right now.
Right. Well, I work from home most of the time. And still, my schedule has been massively disrupted. I can only imagine what this is like for people who don't typically work from home and don't have those tools and those rhythms. Actually, Emily, it's really funny. We're facing a problem with our podcast right now. And that is that to ensure audio quality, we always send our guests headsets. We know what we get. It costs $24. We've been using it for 4.5 years. And first the price is like tripled and now they're just not available. And it's because everybody's ordering headsets to work from home. I imagine, I don't know that there's any like mercenary practices taking place. Although, I mean, the price did triple. I don't know. There's just probably not anything nice to say about how that happens. But
yeah, that's messed up.
When we thought about how we might need to shift our practices due to a change like this, that's just not a problem we anticipated. And
so
everybody's
weird.
Facing issues like that right now. You know, there's at least one big thing that you just did not see coming that you're needing to pivot real quick and figure out how you're going to deal.
It's amazing. I don't have a whole lot of words, but because you love reading, I had some questions about that. You said four kids.
I do.
Four kids. What are their ages?
The youngest is 10. Okay. The oldest just turned 17.
Oh my goodness. So do you look at that 17-year-old and go, oh my gosh, you're almost out of here?
Yes.
In like a...
That hit me a little at a time and then all at once.
Okay. How is 17? I mean, are they seniors?
No, I'm really glad he's not, now that school might be out till the end of the year here where I am in Kentucky.
I know, because that really stinks for these kids. Are like missing some really big things for them. My 8-year-old, his birthday party got canceled and he is heartbroken over it. I can't imagine like your senior
that
year, graduation,
oh,
prom.
I hope it got to him.
I can't imagine.
Oh, prom was canceled. That just happened. I mean, senior prom. He's not a senior, but
yeah, that's
you
sad.
Know, like all his teammates were definitely really sad about that. It is. It's hard. I mean, there's nothing easy about this.
And it's easy for us to be like, okay, but like you still, that's a small problem. But to them, it's not a small problem. It's a big problem.
No, and what we're doing. So whether we're like facing illness or somebody we love is, or managing an illness whose treatment has been massively disrupted because they're clearing out the hospital. So that's an issue too. Or whether your senior prom got canceled. I mean, those are all grieving experiences.
For sure.
And I mean, just because you didn't lose as much as someone else did, didn't mean that you're not experiencing grief. And that's really hard. And then if you start grieving something like your senior prom, when other people are dying, you start feeling shame about feeling grief. Like it's really easy to go bad places really quick.
For sure.
And to be clear, if your senior prom got canceled, that is really sad. And it is okay to grieve that. It doesn't help anybody to compare losses.
No.
But it means we're all going through hard things right now.
Yes, for sure. So your kids are currently at home?
They are. And so even when we're not dealing with COVID-19, people all the time say, oh my gosh, you have four kids. You get so much done. How does this even work? And something I feel like I'm saying all the time on repeat is my youngest is 10. Like he can buckle his own seatbelt. He can put on his own socks. Like I love my babies. I never love putting on their socks, especially when you're doing it like 30 times a day. Mm-hmm. And that's just per kid. He can put on his sock. He can make his own oatmeal, like, and tea. He can, and that's just a different world than when you have a newborn or a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old.
Yes. Yes. My kids are currently, I'm calling this their home ec class for the day. They're currently baking right now. I can hear a lot of like noise happening from the kitchen. So, and my oldest is 10. So I'm not sure if this is a good idea, but I think we'll see. We'll see what happens.
It blows my mind sometimes. Well, first of all, I started babysitting for like small children when I was 10. And now looking back, I think, was it truly a different era or just like, what were people thinking? did those other parents just really need to get out of the house?
It was desperate times. It must have been.
And also my kids read books like I think it's The Courage of Sarah Noble, which I didn't read, even though I had to read like all the book reports they wrote for school about this 7-year-old girl who goes with her father into the woods on some big expedition so she can cook for him. Like she's.
Oh my goodness.
Seven.
That's amazing.
Yeah. They'll be fine.
Yeah. Hopefully.
If anything truly terrible happens, you'll hear it.
That's true. So, how is the quarantine of your kids going?
It's going okay most of the time. But I mean, change is hard. Even good change is stressful. Good change, like you get married, you buy your dream house, like those things are still stressful. So we're all adapting. I really think it's gone remarkably well so far, but I got to say, I feel a lot of responsibility as a parent to make sure that like my kids feel safe and okay through this whole situation. I might be inclined to freak out a little bit, especially very early on, because I had book tour scheduled for my new book. We had to make some decisions about canceling events. So I did do a whole lot of research on the news about what was happening. And I talked to everyone I know who might be considered an expert, just trying to make some tough decisions. And I needed the information to do that. And ooh, that could take me to tense places. But I had to like walk away from my computer and back out to interact with my family, knowing like my kids are going to judge whether or not they're in a safe space, depending on my posture and my body language and the way I talk to them. And I've just really felt parental responsibility for that.
Yeah. How are you checking in to see what are you just asking them? How you doing?
Well, we have group dinner conversations and, you know, breakfast conversations and actually lunch conversations when I'm not recording a podcast online and they don't have an online class. We have four kids and four schools and their online schedules and expectations are all totally different. So that's a lot that I don't usually manage up close and personal. But something I know about my kids is that we have a couple who tend to just bury like stress and anxiety and hope it goes away. So we're definitely making a point to check in with them closely and make sure they're not just stuffing it. And we usually do that like at night is a great time to chat and hear how things are going. I would say riding in the car has also been a good time to check in and see how things are going. Isn't but it? I haven't been in a car for a while now.
I know. It does feel weird to drive. Like, well, look at me. I'm getting out.
We're going to have to go start our cars to make sure that they will start again.
I know. So interesting. It's going to be good for, I think it's going to be good for some of our budgets just to have to stay home.
I'm really curious to see how that goes.
Yeah.
I mean, for everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously losing your salary isn't good, but as far as your expenditures go, I'm curious to see how that's going. And also the immediate and positive environmental effects are.
Exactly.
Fascinating.
I saw that like in Italy, the swans are back and the rivers through the town are clear. And
yeah, it's alternately terrifying and fascinating what's happening in the world right now.
It sure is.
As we enter a time of social distancing and just staying the heck at home, it might be a great time to start a habit change program that uses psychology to teach you how your mind works so you can understand why you make the decisions you make and then make some changes for good. Wouldn't that be great if there was a product like that? Well, guess what? There is. There is a product called Noom, which I've been using and I love, and I want you to give it a try too. With Noom, you pick goals that are right for you, whether it's having your clothes fit better, having more energy to keep up with your kids, or practicing self-care. You get to pick what goal you want, and Noom will personalize a program to help you get there. For me, I could always benefit from a little bit more energy and also an improved mood, and Noom addresses all of those things. Plus, it's such an easy app to use. There are specific lessons that teach you about your habits, and it takes about 10 minutes a day. You get a coach, a personalized coach. My coach is named Emily, so she's already my favorite. And it's so flexible, you can work it into your lifestyle, no matter if you are still going to work or you are sheltering in the very same place day after day. What I love is also that Noom is forgiving if you miss a couple days, which I definitely have. They just give you tips to get back on track and you're moving forward in no time. Over 80% of Noomers finish the program and more than 60% have stuck with their goals for at least a year. Those are great numbers. So it's the perfect time right now to take a step forward with healthier habits. So sign up for your trial today at Noom, that's Noom.com/MSW. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/MSW to start your trial today. That's Noom, which is Noom.com/MSW.
Okay, so in the midst of all this, your book talks about how living well is a byproduct completely of thinking well. And so nobody writes a book about overthinking it and how you shouldn't if you don't have a history of overthinking things. So where what's pre-overthinking Ann Bogle? What was that like for you?
Well, it's interesting that you say that because part of me has thought maybe someone who has never struggled with overthinking should be the one to write the book on not overthinking. But you're right. I think for someone who has never had an issue with overthinking, which to be clear is the minority of Americans, particularly the minority of American women. But if you've never experienced it, then it doesn't seem so hard not to do it. So I did in this book really embrace the idea that, hey, like I've been there. I don't have any magic bullet solutions. I can't cure your anxiety, but I've tried some things. They work for me. They made a difference. Here they are. I hope they help you too. And my experience with this is really twofold. One, as a woman in the world, this is something that I'm inclined to struggle with, but it's not unfair to say that most of us are. Part of that has to do with like, I'm definitely have perfectionistic tendencies. I was really surprised to discover in the course of the past few years that so much overthinking is driven by perfectionism. The two are closely intertwined.
You don't want to mess up. What are you on the Enneagram?
I'm a 9, and we're also not inclined to be decisive. So when it comes to I'm facing a decision, what should I do? I wobble more than your average person right out of the gate. We all face tons of decisions every day, so there's lots of opportunities for wobbling. And I do think that's part of it too, the personality aspect. But also, another thing that got me interested in this topic is after 9/11, we were just talking about comparing losses. My loss was not huge by any means, but because of 9/11 and some things that happened afterwards, I started having panic attacks after that. And it wasn't something like deep breaths would cure. Like they always happen in the middle of the night when I obviously wasn't engaging in conscious thought.
Wow. And okay. So to wake you up out of a dead sleep.
Oh, yeah. And like I'd never had one before. So the first time, like I really had my husband call my doctor to find out what to do. I thought I was dying. Like it was terrifying. But in the road to figuring out what happened, why it was happening, and what can do about it, my general practitioner made this offhanded comment. And he said, look, this is not my area of expertise by a long shot, but I've seen many patients have experiences like this. And I imagine I'm going to see a lot more, because this was like October 2011 when we were not 2011, 2001, when we were talking. And he said, I know that you have more control over this than it probably feels like right now. Because I felt like I had no control, because this was happening to me in the middle of the night. I couldn't see a line between cause and effect. But we strongly suspected, because what had happened when I was in Europe after 9/11 and the intervening time, that it was rooted there. I mean, it had to be. There wasn't anything else.
I was in Europe right after 9/11. Where were you at?
We were flying home. Well, we were flying to New York from Prague when the planes hit the towers.
Are you kidding me? Oh, wow. You really were. Okay, got it. I just mean I lived in Europe after 9/11, but you were like literally. Yeah.
No, we stepped off the airplane like with a bunch of New Yorkers and were handed a printout from CNN that had Sharpie struck through the information that was already deemed to be wrong like 4 hours later. So this was maybe 5 or 6 hours after.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So what he said was, I've seen a lot of patients walk this road and I can't help you with the details, but I just want you to think about this. I know that your thoughts as you go throughout your day can be your enemy, or you can learn to make them your ally, and your path's going to be so much smoother if you can learn how to do that. And of course I said, how? And he said, I have no idea, but it sent me down the road. And while there's a difference between that panic attack inducing anxiety I was feeling after 9/11. And this book is not about anxiety. I'm not a medical practitioner. I think that that's the person who should be writing a book like that. But that for me, that clusters quite closely with overthinking, indecision, and not just like how to stop a negative thought spiral the minute it's happening. But I also know, like so many overthinkers, I would think and think and think my way out of happiness, but I never got out of my own way to let myself experience more. And I really wanted to focus on that aspect of it as well. Because I'd see how not only did overthinking make me and so many people miserable, but it really cuts us off from life's simple pleasures. And, you know, life's too short to do that. There are enough obstacles in your way. Like, you don't need to be another one.
Right. But then on the other side of the coin, you could just say, well, I'm just not going to think about it. And this amazing vacation sounds great. And I'm just going to buy it and go and not, you know, and then you end up in bankruptcy. So I think that's the fear of not overthinking, is that you're going to destroy your life.
Well, there's a big difference between overthinking something and giving an issue the amount of attention it deserves.
Okay.
Like it's not overthinking if you're giving something the amount of mental energy you want to. So we're definitely not saying don't think about things. Just like, you see that $7,000 trip in front of you? Just say yes and don't think about it anymore. Like that is not the solution to this.
Right.
The solution is to like make sure that you're spending your limited amount of mental energy in a way that you're happy with.
You talk about in your book about how to interrupt overthinking when it starts. I think sometimes we don't know we're overthinking because we're so busy thinking about it that we're not thinking about our thinking.
Yes. Or I feel like it's like that old chestnut, like, does a fish even know what water is? You know, like you're just surrounded by it all the time. You take it for granted. It's kind of like everybody thinks their own family of origin is normal. Like you assume that the way you think about the world is the way everyone thinks about the world. And that's just the way it is. And then we may not even realize we're doing it. I like to think about overthinking like this. Think about overthinking. That sounds funny to me, but truly, when we talk about overthinking, we're talking about thoughts that are repetitive, unhealthy,
unhelpful.
And unhelpful. Yeah. You're not overthinking if you're working through a problem. If your thoughts are accomplishing something, if you're moving towards a solution, I wouldn't call that overthinking. But if your brain is hard at work, but you're not accomplishing anything, that's overthinking.
You're like spinning your wheels at that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wears you out and it makes you feel bad. But really, three words, overthinking is repetitive, unhealthy, unhelpful. Many people experience it like feeling like you're the hamster on the treadmill in your mind.
Okay. So what's a good way to stop that?
Well, the good news and the bad news is that there's so many ways, because overthinking infiltrates so many areas of our lives and it takes so many different forms that just stopping globally is really difficult. But the good news is that there's something you can probably do right away to overcome overthinking, because you're doing it in so many different ways. There's so many things you can do to overcome it in the moment and to support yourself. You'll have an opportunity to try a new strategy really soon once you start to pay attention to your thoughts and maybe notice that you're doing it. First of all, something that I have been really surprised and a little bit, to be honest, disappointed to discover is how important setting ourselves up for success is. So much overthinking. If you're overthinking at 2 p.m., that's not just a product of what's happening in your life at 2 p.m. That's a product of what you did yesterday and last night and this morning. We don't overthink when we're healthy and well-rested and well-fed. We overthink when we are feeling emotionally down, when we're mentally fatigued. We do it when we're hungry. We did it when we had Skittles for lunch. So it sounds so boring and we don't want it to be true, but when we do the things within our control and, you know, loosely within our control, it feels like sometimes, but when we do get rest, when we don't eat Doritos for dinner, when we take a walk and get some sunshine on our faces, we really do help ourselves think better. The research bears out over and over. What's good for the body is good for the brain and vice versa.
Yeah, I teach my clients at work at the eating disorder place that there's something called a Minnesota starvation experiment. Have you heard of this?
No.
There were conscientious objectors. I believe it was World War II. And they didn't want, obviously, they didn't want to fight, but they still wanted to participate. And so they said, okay, well, we would like to test prisoners of war, like we'd like to test, you know, something like that and see what happens with prisoners of war. So we're going to increase your work and decrease your food. And they were, I think it was 40 or so completely healthy men. And when they decreased their caloric intake and increased their work, they all became obsessed with food. They started hoarding cookbooks. They started self-harming, all the things they never did before, but all the things my clients do. So it's just fascinating that, yeah, when we don't take care of our bodies, our brains, they literally can't function. I don't know. It's just interesting that it's
yeah,
so connected.
And I think when we're facing what feel like complicated problems, we feel like it deserves like a really robust, complicated solution. Mm. We don't want the solution to be as simple as take a nap.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's what we need. And I know that can be so hard to hear. Like my firstborn didn't sleep through the night till he was 5. And I probably would want to throw things at somebody who said like, honey, you got to get some sleep. But that didn't mean that what my brain needed to function was sleep. So do the best you can. And also it doesn't change things. Like whether or not that's easy for you right now, it doesn't change the fact that it is important. I mean, physiologically, that's just the way our bodies are made.
Right. And if you can't take a nap, you can still maybe take a walk, or you can maybe have an apple instead of, you know, a candy bar. Sometimes I tend to be all or nothing. So I think, well, if I can't take a nap, then I need a candy bar. What?
Right, no. Right, right.
You're digging the hole deeper.
Right. Well, and it's harder to make good decisions that actually serve you once you've started walking down that road. I mean, once you eat Skittles for lunch, your brain is feeling a little woozy. So it's harder to be like, I'm going to put down my phone and go outside. So it is true. Like we can get in a negative spiral in that way too. But it's so much easier to interrupt the problem and right ourselves when we see what the problem actually is. If we don't realize we're doing it, we're powerless to change it. But once you at least know to check in with yourself, like, do I need a glass of water? When's the last time I got up out of my chair? When you know to like run through a little mental check checklist, like how is my physical body doing right now? It truly does become a habit fairly quickly. And then you can recognize when you're starting to go down that road that goes bad places and turn around and go back.
All right. So we're not supposed to be leaving our houses. We're supposed to stay home as much as humanly possible. But what do you do when you got to go get some products for your house? I have the solution for you. It's Grove Collaborative. Healthy, plant-based, non-toxic cleaning products work, and the good ones are actually more enjoyable to use. But where do you start and who do you trust? That's where Grove Collaborative comes in. They are the online marketplace that delivers all-natural home, beauty, and personal care products directly to you. I love everything from Mrs. Meyers, and Grove Collaborative keeps that stuff coming to my house, and it makes me so happy. And with Grove, you don't have to shop at multiple stores or search endlessly online to get all the natural goods you need. You can get it all from them in one place and they deliver it right to you. Plus, the shipping is fast and free on your first order. So for a limited time, moms who are struggling well can go to grove.co/MSW and you'll get free 5-piece cleaning set from Mrs. Meyers and Grove. It's a $30 value. Go to grove.co/MSW to get this exclusive cleaning offer. grove.co/MSW. I want to take a moment and tell you again about the Hands-On Bible. If you're home with your kiddos right now, you've got a lot more time than you used to. All of a sudden, we're teachers. Some of us never thought that we ever wanted to homeschool. Well, guess what, sisters? I hope you're liking it. Well, one way that you can enjoy this time together is to use the Hands-On Bible. It has more than 150 activities in the Bible that parents and kids can do together. It's funny, the graphics are fun, and this Bible helps kids learn, understand, and then live out all of these important biblical truths. There's even science experiments and crafts. It really is a great Bible. My kids love it. So to get one today for 35% off, go to thehandsonbible.com and use coupon code MSW. So again, go to thehandsonbible.com and you'll get 35% off of a deluxe edition of the Bible through April 12th, but make sure to use coupon code MSW. I hope you love it as much as we do. So how are you different now after you've been doing these things?
Wow, I feel like this is like a cheesy before and after story. But honestly, I have had to make some really hard decisions. I mean, some of which as recently as last week involving the coronavirus, but decisions involving my life, my work, my kids, my money. Money, incidentally, is something that many people who are otherwise decisive get all kinds of tripped up about. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about buying name brand crackers or like spending money on a major purchase. There's something about the money itself that seems to trigger all kinds of things in people who otherwise wouldn't describe themselves as overthinkers. Learning some strategies. Well, first of all, really learning to check in with myself and be like, is this a healthy thought pattern? Is this the way I want to be thinking? Where is this thought pattern going to take me? Am I going anywhere good in my mind right now? Just noticing that is a big first step for anyone. Pay attention to your thoughts. If you don't realize you're overthinking, you won't be able to do anything about it. Something else that's been incredibly helpful for me is this concept that sounds so boring, but is so miraculous. I want to write love songs about it, is values-driven decision-making. This was not something I was familiar with a few years ago, but the basic idea is when you are able to get clear on what your priorities are. And I don't mean like having a family vision statement or anything like that, but when you start to see the connection between what you believe, what you want in your life, and how that can and should impact what you choose to do on a daily basis, it removes all the friction out of decision making. What you do flows naturally out of who you are, and it just makes things so much easier and clearer. Like an example is, here, I'll give you a real recent example. So before the CDC released their new recommendations that said, don't travel, don't meet in groups, we had to make decisions for my book tour events because I had this whole book tour planned for Don't Overthink It, which came out March 3rd. We canceled all my events taking place after March 6th, just so since it's not so fresh anymore, so listeners can hear the timeline. But like I know and can now articulate, I really value books and reading. I really value getting together with people in person, whether that's dear friends and family, or whether that's readers that I've only known on the internet, or maybe I don't know, but listen to my voice every Tuesday. And, you know, like, I think that's really valuable to meet in person. I care deeply about caring for the least of these and being respectful of other people's freedoms and other people's health. So I was making this decision about, well, first of all, when we decided, do we want to do book tour or not? Because it's expensive, it's time consuming, it takes all kinds of resources, financial and otherwise. Knowing I value books and reading, I value the bookstores that will host the events and get the business, I'll get to meet those people in person. I value getting together in person. And I'm deeply committed to these work. And it means a lot to me to see the people who are on the other end of that. Like, I can't do what I do if nobody's reading and listening. So I thought, yes, it's worth it. We're going on book tour. But then we had this coronavirus decision and we said, okay, like, in the face of competing priorities, what do we do? Like, we really value getting together in person. We value letting people make their own choices. We really value minding other people's physical well-being. Like, how do we decide? And we decided that we were not putting anyone in danger, especially thinking about, like, my parents are in the at-risk group. Our audience does not skew young. We have every generation in our audience listening to books. Like, kids come with their mom. Actually, I should say daughters come with their mothers, whether those daughters are 8 or whether they're like 60. And we love that about our audience, but also knowing that we span the gamut from young kids to people who are retired, like, we knew that we'd be putting them potentially in danger, and we weren't comfortable doing that. Also, something that's really helped me not overthink is to really embrace the idea of decide where you're going to go wrong, because I'm not going to get every decision right. You're not going to get every decision right. But if I decide in advance that if I get it wrong, I'm going to err on the side of, usually I'd say, meeting together in person. Like, my husband and I have decided that we are going to have a preferential option to show up. So maybe we'll end up thinking, like, we spent too much money on that. Or maybe we'd end up thinking, like, oh, was it really worth, you know, taking the weekend away with our family to go meet up with old friends? We decide that we wouldn't worry about that. But if we couldn't decide, we'd err on the side of showing up. In this case, we decided if we were going to screw up, we were going to screw up on the side of health and safety.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's just one way that it's like a mental trick I've learned to use to lower the stakes. Because when we get, like, really tense about making the absolute right decision, oh my gosh, it has to be perfect. Then we seize and we can't decide. And finally, I've learned all these little strategies for recognizing, okay, when you're overthinking in the moment, what do you do? Like, how do you break that cycle? And of course, that's been really helpful.
Yeah. It's interesting as you're talking, I think, well, I think I know what my values are and I think I know what the best choices are, but I typically go with what I'm feeling over what I'm thinking. Like, I know what I should do, but I just do a different thing.
Well, you know, like, I'm a 9, I'm an INFP. Like, I tend to make decisions from my gut. And when we were talking about this whole coronavirus thing, like, I knew what I wanted to do, but I knew what I felt to be right, but I had to explain that decision to other people. And I couldn't tell businesses, like, this is going to cost us all, like, a lot of money in book sales because it's what my gut tells me to do. No, like, I couldn't say that to them. Then I needed to step back and be like, okay, how are we making this decision? What are the values driving it? Because going from my gut would have been good enough for me, but it's still, even though I would say it's not a good enough reason to cancel on people and say, you know what, I just don't feel like coming this weekend. You couldn't say that at all. And that totally, that I just don't feel it's right wouldn't have reflected the care and concern
exactly
I felt for them, because it didn't sound thoughtful and reflective. It sounded impulsive, but,
or flippant, like, yeah.
But something that's been so powerful in this whole years long exercise is to, like, pay attention to how I spend my time, how I spend my money, how I spend my attention, and notice, like, what do I care about? Like, what values are driving those decisions? If you don't like what you see, of course, then you can learn to do better. But in this situation, I knew what I felt to be right, but then it was really powerful to be able to articulate it, even to myself. Because sometimes we have strong feelings about something, but we can't really explain why, not even to ourselves. And there's real power to labeling things in that way.
Yes. That's all so helpful. I'm having a hard time thinking of questions because my brain is just like, I like it. This is really going to give me a lot of things to think about. I wanted to read this quote that I really loved because in our podcast with Mom Sterling Well, we talk a lot about perspective shifts. So I'm going to read this and I want to talk about it. It says, our perspective impacts how well we deal with the situation at hand. When we perceive the stakes to be high, we're more likely to freeze, especially if we're prone to perfectionism. When spontaneity strikes, it's helpful to purposefully adopt a low stakes mindset, which is so hard for perfectionists. It's always high stakes, but it's not and isn't really. Instead of striving to choose the ideal option, we can aim to choose a good one, reminding ourselves that the best memories often start with something going wrong. And I thought of you and all the books you read, and that probably is very true. Like, that's like the setup of a great story is a disaster. But in our real lives, we're trying to avoid those. But anyway, so, and then instead of resisting the change of plans, we can lean in, expecting good things. And as a bonus, this lowers our anxiety, which makes it easier to decide. I loved that.
Yeah. So what I was talking about there was how many of us just cannot deal with a change in plans. We think we know what we're going to do that day, but then the babysitter cancels, or it's raining, or we find out that restaurant we wanted to go to on Tuesday night actually is closed on Mondays and Tuesdays, mm-hmm. and we just don't know what to do next. But yeah, what you're describing is how adopting an attitude of experimentation is so freeing for so many people who find it really difficult to make decisions because they put so much pressure on themselves. And when I say we, I'm definitely including myself that segment of the population. I mean, I've gotten so much better, but that naturally left to my own devices years ago, like that's exactly where I go, like doom and panic.
Yeah. But I love the idea the best memories start with something going wrong. I mean, I think then especially in this uncertain time, we are set up for some really great memories because everything's going wrong right now.
Well, and you know, something I've read that really has affected the way like I approach it in my mind, and I think like really has helped me call on my higher self, is that your kids won't necessarily remember what happened out there, but they're definitely going to remember what your home felt like during this time. Like, did they feel peace, joy, and love? Or did they feel like everything is broken and we only have half a roll of toilet paper? Like,
It's true. It's so good.
If you're making jokes about the family cloth, like.
I can't imagine. Like, right now I'm envisioning explaining the family cloth to my kids and saying, this is what we're doing. They'd be like, are you? No, that's not happening. Oh my gosh, it's all so weird.
If you think one day they can tell their grandkids this story, shaking their head and laughing, if that's where you are, you're doing it right.
It's true.
Even if the laundry's pretty gross for a while.
Just
knock on something. I hope we don't get there.
I know. Gosh. Well, Anne, thank you so much for writing this book, doing all this research. I think that it's really helpful all the time, but especially during this time where our overthinking is really flaring up.
I hope so. When I wrote it, like, I definitely didn't have in mind, don't overthink your pandemic. but I imagine much more everyday applications. And yet I hope it's helping people. Because I mean, something hard is always happening in life, like all the time, every day. And we need to learn how to, wow, that sounds bossy.
Well, I mean, I think for our own good, it would be best for us to learn.
Yeah. If we can learn some strategies that can help us roll with it much of the time, like you talked about the importance of mindset, something I read from one of my favorite authors, David Joy, on Twitter this morning was, you know, you can have the mindset of like everyone for themselves, make sure I'm stocked, I'm going to hunker down, or this is a crisis that's going to call on a lot of us to help each other in ways we haven't before. One invites fear and panic, and the other invites a real sense of love and community. Mindset really matters, and that will be no less true when this is all a distant memory.
That's true. Very true. So everybody, you can get Anne's book any place, right? Especially airports. I'm just kidding.
It's also available. I read the audiobook myself. That's something they always want podcasters to do. Emily, if you write a book, you're totally narrating it because people know your voice.
Okay.
but I read that you can get it from Libro FM, where money goes to local small businesses.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you can get the ebook wherever you get your ebooks. So depending on how book delivery is going, when this hits listeners' ears, you can get it delivered to you electronically immediately.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. All right. Well, Anne, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, ladies, I hope you enjoyed my chat with Anne Bogle. I think she's just lovely. Do check out her podcast, What Should I Read Next? Get on her email list at themodernmissdarcy.com, I'm assuming is the end of that. She sends all kinds of great book recommendations. So what will your strategy be to struggle well, based on what Anne said? Like we said in the beginning, our kids pick up our posture when things are going on. And so maybe this week you struggle well by just reminding yourself what you know is true about God, about his care for you, so that your posture can not be like super scared all the time. Yeah? If you're in a place that's really nervous right now. I liked Anne's question about how we spend our limited mental energy. We really only have so much mental energy. And it's interesting, it doesn't seem like just thinking should use up so much energy, but it really, really does. And so we have to really be conscious of the things we're making our brain do. So don't spend your thinking on things that are not worth thinking about. So maybe this week you struggle well by beginning to notice when you might be overthinking. So remember, she said you can know if you're overthinking because your thinking is repetitive, unhealthy, and unhelpful. So I'd encourage you to check in with yourself and notice if you might be overthinking. And grab Anne's book. It's got a lot of great tidbits in it. It's a really good book. And finally, I loved this idea about decide where you're going to go wrong. Where you want to err on the side of what? She said, usually it's err on the side of connection and community and getting together. But in this situation, she wants to err on the side of safety for everyone. So decide where you're going to go wrong if you do make a mistake, because we are going to make mistakes. But if we can know what our actual values are, then we can choose where, if we're going to have to be wrong, I'd rather be wrong on the side of whatever this value is that I hold dear. So really good stuff to think about. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Come find me over at Instagram at Mom Struggling Well. I love interacting with y'all there because right now I'm just sitting in my closet by myself, and that's not as fun. Not as fun. All right, let me go ahead and pray for us. Hey Lord, would you give us a perspective shift on this new way of living that we are going to be doing for an unknown period of time? Please give us the long view of this whole situation. Please help us be in the moment, enjoying everything great there is to enjoy about the moment. Romans 8:28 says that you turn all things for good for those who love you and are called according to your purpose. And Lord, for those of us who do love you, I mean, this feels a lot bigger than something that you could turn out for good, but thankfully we're not God and you are, and I've seen you do it and I believe you'll do it again. So I pray that you would help us think about those things and not the things that are scaring us today. Lord, thank you that you're present, and thank you that you love us. In Jesus' name, amen.